In other words, another lovely day. You built up a lot of good energy, I hope, for meditating for so many days. And so this is what happens. The more you meditate, the more you follow instructions, making peace, being kind, being gentle. The more you actually just focus on that lotus, just with awareness and kindness, the more you open up, and you open up deeper and deeper throughout the retreat. That's why we do a 9-day retreat. It gives lots of time to really get in there and to see what's deep inside of you. And the talk this morning, I was going to give another talk to keep going on the insight practice, but maybe not go so deep. The ones I was talking about yesterday, the insights, these are the ones which make you totally enlightened, as I said, which turn your world upside down, you see things in a different way, and you really start to understand what's going on. But there are still many other ways you can see that this practice also works in with insight. And it's a story which unfortunately I have to tell on every retreat because people keep on asking me, and I'm surprised it hasn't come into the question box yet, is what is the difference between samatha and vipassana? Samatha is the calm meditation. Do you think that's what you've been doing here? Making the mind very still and peaceful and getting to jhanas. And many people who don't know what they're talking about, including monks, sometimes they say, oh, this is just samatha, and later on you must do vipassana. And vipassana is the four foundations of mindfulness, which is also totally wrong. But they always want to know what is the connection between samatha and vipassana. Now, the first answer is that teaching from my own master, Ajahn Chah. Whenever he was asked that question, he'd put up his hand and he said, now you see the front of my hand, but the back is always there as well, just you can't see it. Now you see the back of my hand and you can't see the front. But he said the front is still here because the back and the front of a hand cannot be separated. Yeah, sure, you may be only be able to see one of them at a time, but you know the other one is right behind. He said, that's the same with samatha vipassana. You may think you're doing calm meditation, but the insight is right behind. You may think you're doing insight, but the calm is right behind. You cannot split them up. And one thing which I think I mentioned on the first day, what I repeat here, samatha does not mean concentration. Please never say that word equated with meditation. It's not concentration. It's not concentration. It's not, I'm brainwashing you again. It's not concentration. That was one of the most unfortunate translations which has stopped so many people from enjoying meditation. Because again, concentration is what you do at school. Concentrate! And so concentration has got a very bad reputation for me. It's something you're afraid of, you have to force yourself to do. And of course, it's also the word associated with those facilities called concentration camps. And if you go to some retreats, some Buddhist retreats, it is very similar to concentration camps in the Second World War. Get up, sit down. And if you don't meditate, you get gassed. Well, not really that bad, but Sometimes it's like that. It's so forceful, like you're in some prison. Now that has got nothing to do with meditation. Meditation, samatha means stillness. So take away the idea of concentration. Totally abandon that idea of concentration. Call it stillness. And you understand what samatha is. And also you understand, because it's stillness, why you do need stillness to have insight. Why you need insight, when you have insight, how that produces stillness. Not concentration, stillness. And that makes meditation so much easier for people, because many people, they can't concentrate. When they try, they just get headache. But being still, that's something you can learn how to do. And when you understand this is all about being still and seeing things as they truly are, then you have Buddhist meditation in a nutshell. So stillness, samatha, and insight, vipassana. They always go together. And of course, you don't just stick to what your teacher said. You always expand it and elaborate and add the new similes. And my new simile was the couple, the husband and wife, Sam and Vai. Sam Atta and Vai Pasana. Sam and Vai decided after lunch to go on a walk up Meditation Mountain. Sam wanted to go on that walk because it was peaceful up on Meditation Mountain. Vai wanted to go up Meditation Mountain because you could see this glorious view on top of Meditation Mountain. She went up there for the view. Sam went up there for the peace. But like many couples, they had a dog. So they decided to take their dog on the walk up Meditation Mountain as well. And the dog's name was Metta. So Metta the dog, Sam and Vi, walked up Meditation Mountain. The higher they got, the more peaceful it became. When they were even halfway up, it was very still. Even halfway up Meditation Mountain. Halfway up, you could see such a beautiful view. So Vi, she was getting out her camera and taking all these insight shots. Amazing insights you could see from halfway up Meditation Mountain. And Metta the dog? Metta the dog was one of these really easy, simple meditators. She was just wagging her tail the higher she got up. Because the higher you get up Meditation Mountain, the happier it is. When they got to the top of Meditation Mountain, Sam Atta, oh, he was so happy. He was so still up there. There were no thoughts. You couldn't even feel the body. Everything was so peaceful and still that nothing moved. But he also had a pair of eyes, so he could see the incredible view on the top of Meditation Mountain. And as for Vi, his wife, oh, she could see everything on top of Meditation. You could see the whole of samsara all laid out. It's so easy to get insights into everything on top there. But she also could experience a deep stillness there on top of Meditation Mountain. And as for Metta the dog, she was wagging her tail like it will fall off and running around in circles. She was so happy. But you know, she could also experience the stillness and also see the view. You ever seen dogs? They go in high places, they look over great views. They enjoy seeing insights too. And the reason was, because on the top of Meditation Mountain, stillness, that's samatha, insight, vipassana, and metta coexist. You cannot separate them out. Now, many people say samatha and vipassana go as a pair. But you know, from experience, it's not from the suttas, this is how it works. Metta comes as well. And you can't stop the dog following up the mountain. So whenever you get into deep meditation, you've got this incredible amount of love and happiness and joy, as well as stillness. Which is why, you know, that a lot of times people, when they do get into these deep meditations, and they don't know what they're talking about, they've never done this before, they just fluke a jhana, they come out afterwards and you know how they, often, how they describe that bliss? They say, pure love. And it's, you know, just, they don't really know what love means. But, you know, it's just so powerful, so selfless, so joyful. They describe it as metta. Which is why all these things, they come together. I know the other time, which, you know, many people experience, you know, the equivalent to a jhana, again, is when people die. You know, you've all read or seen on documentaries or on YouTube, people who leave their body because they've had an accident or they've died on the operating table, they go floating out and they go to the light. And when they go on the other side of the light, you know, the nimittas, a lot of times when they come back, they're just pure love, just one with the whole universe. It's just an amazing experience. But most times, they don't say such things as ecstasy. Although, yeah, that's what is ecstatic. But how they describe it mostly is like pure love. Which is one of the reasons why I always include metta going up on top of that mountain. because they all go together. And why it's also important that you respect loving kindness throughout the whole practice. I think a couple of days ago or yesterday I did mention doing loving kindness towards your breath. Loving kindness goes all the way. Now, I already mentioned, how do you open the lotus? Being mindful and being kind. The trouble is, many people, they just try and be mindful, but they forget the kindness. When you do that, come on, be mindful. Mindful! You be mindful or else. Now, of course that doesn't work. If you say, you can be mindful if you like. If you don't want to be mindful, that's fine. Be mindful there, it's okay. You try that and you become mindful. It's amazing just how loving kindness just gives you the energy of the mind, which goes straight into knowing, and you just really wake up and you feel very, very alert. So, those three go together. And how this actually works, just focusing on the insight part of it, as you just develop your meditation, you really can't help but sort of think, what happened? Why did it happen? What was going on? That is like insight. You're getting insight into the path of what meditation is. And even on this retreat, many of you have done many different types of meditations before. You know, you may have done the tough meditations, you may have done yoga meditation, you may have done all sorts of meditations. Meditation is really popular now. It's so popular that you can actually go to a person and actually pay them for this teaching. And these are the people I teach. You get it straight from the source, you know, pretty much free here. This is really cut price. It's very, very good, because you can actually go to these courses and they charge you an arm and a leg to actually to learn meditation. And you say, you know, you ask these people, you know, who taught you? They say, Ajahn Brahm. Well, I can just go and see him for free every Saturday afternoon, or go on YouTube. But the problem is, because the monks don't charge, because this is, you know, all you're paying for here is just the accommodation. No, I don't get anything out of this, except for some nice breakfast every morning. Thank you, Rodney. But the reason is, because we don't charge, people think we're no good. It's true. Because that's what happened to one of our monks. Some lady called him up. She was obviously, from the accent, was an American lady. I hear you teach meditation. The monk said, yes, I teach meditation. How much do you charge? He said, nothing, it's for free. Well, if it's for free, you can't be any good then. And she hung up the phone. That's true, that's what happened. Really funny. Because that's what people think. If it's for free, it can't be any good. So these days, we never say that anymore. If someone calls me up and says, do you teach meditation? You say, yes. How much does it cost? I never say it's for free. Otherwise, they don't value it anymore. So I worked out, we say, it's priceless. Priceless, not for free, okay? So the teachings here are just priceless. They're not for free. That means you value it, but you don't have to pay any money. But going back to the insight stuff, there's another story. When I was in earlier this year, in Kuala Lumpur, this very wealthy guy came up to me. And he's sort of, one of these, you know, if you're wealthy in Malaysia, I mean, you really are wealthy, big time wealthy. And so he had some depression or some problems with his life. So what he did, being really wealthy, he flew to New York and booked in at the, I think it's the Mayo Clinic. It's where all the film stars of incredibly rich people go. And he made an appointment with the psychologist who started all this mindfulness-based stress reduction, John Kabat-Zinn. Now, he's a really famous guy now, so because he was rich, he could make a personal appointment with this guy. And then when he came back, he told me, he said, look, this is amazing. All those teachers, you know, teaching psychology and getting people out of depression and all these other problems which film stars have, he said, they're all Buddhists. Even John Kabat-Zinn, he teaches exactly what you teach here. And I could have just come and got it for free. even better, you know, from the source. So it's really strange sometimes. If you pay thousands of dollars for it, you think it's really good. And if it's free. And you know, I'm sure that in this place, if we charge $1,000 a day, we're never going to do this, but this is really gross. But you know the psychology. If I charge $1,000 a day, this place will be full. Lots and lots of people come from all over the world. Simply because $1,000 a day, it must be good. And then they'll sign up. It's crazy, people's psychology. But the insight which you get is you've got to have kindness and just give it free. I got it for free, so you give it back for free. Now, to get insight into the way that meditation works, when again, that's a seminar I gave earlier on about being in the cloud on top of the mountain. You don't know which way to go. Now that's going to be the biggest problem when you start meditating. You don't really know which way to go. You can trust, but even if you trust the teacher, you may not understand what they're saying. You know that when the word comes out of my mouth, it's pretty accurate. By the time it gets into your brain, it's been changed and some things forgotten, some things added. So it's very difficult to learn just from words. So you have to have your own little experiences, first of all. But what the insight does to you, you actually start to experience, you know, that we are more mindful. And one of the ways you can experience more mindfulness is the food tastes more delicious. I say that because people are really into the food, especially when you only eat twice a day. It's really important for you. But have many of you noticed that whether it's a cup of tea or whether it's just a piece of toast or a curry, it tends to taste more delicious on a retreat than when you get home. And it's not the cook. What's happening there? Your mindfulness is increasing. So you can actually taste more of the flavors. You're waking up. You're becoming aware. You find you can experience the sunsets or the beautiful views. You can spend a lot of time there just with a cup of tea looking at the sunset and enjoying it. You see it more deeply. Have you noticed that you can't do that in ordinary life? It's not you haven't got time, you just can't see the beauty. And the simile which I gave, which is a common simile, again, those of you who come on every retreat, I say the same stories because you keep on coming. If you really understood them, you wouldn't need to come again. So that was the story of how insight and happiness and stillness all work together. It was the story of walking up the road, up from the bottom of the hill, up to Bodhinyana Monastery. And then the road you came up to come in here. It was a beautiful spring day. I had plenty of time. And so I asked my driver to please let me off at the bottom. I just want to walk up for some exercise. And also just to enjoy the beautiful morning. So I walked up this hill. It's only 2 and a bit kilometers from the bottom of the hill to the gate at Bodhinyana Monastery. Now the strange thing was, this was the first time I'd done that walk in 7 years. And someone was telling me that Ajahn Brahmani in the office, and he's been here about 20 years, he's never done that walk, ever, not once. And many of you have been coming up here. Rodney, how many times have you been coming to this monastery? For years, have you ever done that walk? Now this is what happens, because when we stay in a place, we go up and down usually in a vehicle, and we assume that we know our surroundings. That was my assumption. For 7 years I've been living in this monastery, up and down the road in a car, I don't know how many times a week. But I walked, and it was a very strange experience. I could not recognize my surroundings. Was this the hill I lived on? Because it looked totally different when I walked. If you don't believe me, try this. The house in which you live, most of you may have just gone up and down that street in a car. One day, just walk to the end of the street. And you'll be surprised that you see things you've never ever noticed before. It is like you're walking down that street for the first time. Now when that happened, I saw so many things I'd never seen before. It was strange. What is going on? I live in this place. I should know this hillside. So I stood still. And when I stood still, it changed again. Because standing still, I could see so much more. But better than that, everything became deeper. The colors, the greens became richer greens. And the detail started to stand out. And I thought, you know, what is going on here? This is really weird. And everything looked more beautiful than I'd ever seen it before. And it was just an ordinary day. I mean, it was a nice day, but it wasn't anything special. But I'd never seen that hillside look as gorgeous. And when you have experiences, you will always contemplate them afterwards. You don't say, I will have to. You can't stop. So I started trying to find out what's going on. I'm getting insight into that experience. And it didn't take me long to understand what was happening was that when you look through the window of a speeding car, the light which falls on the back of your eye, on the retina, it forms an image, it's a chemical reaction. But when you look through the window of a car, another image comes up, dislodges the first, then another, they come so fast, one after the other, that no one image has a chance to fully form. So even the image, it's only just a rough outline. There's no detail. And the colours, because this is a chemical reaction, the colours don't fully mature. They're just washed out, they're pastel. But when I got out of the car and started walking, the eyes had much more time. So the light came in, it formed a more deeper image with more detail before the next one came. But when I stood perfectly still and just looked, the image started to form more and more. I could see more detail. I saw beautiful little flowers which I'd never noticed before, little rocks with lichen on them. I never noticed that before because I was going too fast. And even better, the colours. You know, the greens and the browns, they were just deeper than I'd ever imagined could be. Because now they fully formed. The chemical reaction in the eye had enough time to complete. And my mind had enough time to explore this beautiful image. It was incredibly beautiful. And I could see so much detail because I was still. That is how your senses work. If you rush, you can't pick out the taste. Most of it is lost. If you feel, that's why I've asked many of you to go out into the forest and feel the wind, feel the heat, and feel the texture on the bottom of your feet. Take your socks off. Feel it. The more still you get, the more you can actually feel. And it gets very rich. And it was unexpected for me, but it yet beautiful as well. It gets so happy. Whatever sense you have, everything becomes richer, deeper, fuller. That's what I meant on top of Meditation Mountain. Stillness, seeing more things, and having greater happiness, love if you like. The three of them always go together. Metta, stillness, and insight. You can't change them. You can't split them up. So one of the things you can know that you're going in the right direction in this meditation, it's not that you're becoming more insightful, you understand things more. Yeah, you can sort of understand that, but you can fool yourself very easily with insight. You can feel stillness. You know roughly what stillness is. But one of the great indicators your meditation is going well is your happiness and your beautiful sense of metta. If that's increasing, well done, you're going up the mountain, not down. And that's something which you can't fake. If your meditation's going well, the person in the next room who makes all the noise. When you start this retreat, ugh! But if the meditation's going well, ah, poor thing. They must have a lot of problems in their life. Ah, I don't know why they're making so much noise, but I wish them happiness and well-being. Poor things. You get much more loving kindness. And one great way of knowing that is when you go home. If when you go home, the first thing you do is argue with your husband. I gave you all these things to do and you've done nothing all the 9 days I've been away. Why did you do that for? I told you to do this. What have you been up to? Then you'd be wasting your time on this retreat. But if you go back and you see your wife and you find your wife has been shopping, 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 and there's been no money left in your accounts. And then others would say, "Ah, you poor thing, I hope you really enjoyed your shopping." Never mind, you know, we can always just run away and become monks and nuns because we've got no money left. But if you have that kindness, then great, you've been doing some good meditation. That is a much better sign that your meditation is going well. Much better than some coming up and saying all these amazing things you've understood. You can fake that. Stillness, you know, it's hard to fake, but loving kindness, you can't fake that because you'll always be tested. Throughout the day, even here, someone irritating you. You know, somebody, the crow flying on top of you and pooing on your head. It does happen, you know. I don't know why, I think they target you. And they're pretty good shots. Whatever it is. But this is testing you out. And if, you know, you just get so peaceful and happy no matter what happens on this retreat, great. You're getting insight, you're getting stillness, your meditation's taking off. So you find out this is insight, yeah, it's actually working. And it's so much fun being happy. What are you miserable for? It really sucks being miserable. Add suffering onto suffering. So if you want a nice, joyful life, get this happiness from stillness and also through insight. They all work together. So the insight, you see, yeah, this is actually how it works. And I know I can test my meditation by the mouth meter. You know, like you have meters on cars, see whether you're running full gas, full petrol, or you're empty. So you have a little dial, and this is this dial over here. If this is going down, you're not meditating very well. Horizontal, that's still not good enough. Up. Then that's a good sign your meditation's going well. Yeah, that's a lot of things. That's what actually I look for. If you come on your interview and you come along and say, "I've just become enlightened, Ajahn Brahm," I say, "Oh, yeah, sure." But if you come along and say, "Ajahn Brahm, oh, I've become enlightened, ooh," then okay, fair enough. So that's how you can tell. So you're getting the insight into actually the path. And it is that insight which will drive your meditation more than anything else. I call it using wisdom power, not willpower. And that's such an important teaching here, because if you try using willpower to meditate, you'll get nowhere, you waste a lot of time. But also, you just stress yourself out, give yourselves headaches, and even get more depressed. Willpower does not work in meditation. If it did, there'll be people who have got far greater willpower than I would ever have. These people who just go for something, and nothing will stand in their way. You know people like that. They're pains in the arse. That's not a nice person to be. But wisdom power, you can just get into these deep meditations just by avoiding all the obstacles, just by using your insight, understanding. And what you understand is every time you come across an obstacle in meditation, you're at a certain stage and you can't go deeper inside. Don't keep on just forcing. Ask yourself why. Why is it that I'm plateaued here and I'm not going deeper? Force is not good enough. Insight is. It must mean you're holding on to something. There's something you're not letting go of, which is why you can't go deeper. It's just like at the airport. If you fly in these cheap carriers like Tiger Air or Air Asia, you're not allowed to have any check-in baggage unless you want to pay extra. So if you go to the airport with check-in baggage, they won't let you on the flight. If you're going into jhana with baggage, I'm sorry, they won't let you through the gate. You have to let go and be free, be empty. So there must be something you're holding on to which stops you going deeper. So you have a look at these plateaus. What am I holding on? Why? Number one, expectation. This is one of the problems when I teach. I tell you all about these amazing states, these beautiful lights coming up, and oh, this better than sex. You know, you just light, which is blinding. The whole body disappears, and you're having the happiest moment of your life. No, sorry, of your many lives. Oh, this is so amazing. Would you like to see this? Would you? Yes, 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 yes. I want, give me. So what happens when you get close? You have all this wonderful expectation. It's going to happen. You're close. That's what's stopping you. That's number one, expectation. So you check, what do I expect? It's the same with like saying, what do I want? I mean, I mentioned that earlier a lot of times. I said, what do I want anyway? What I really, really want is just to be peaceful, be content. So what do I want to get jhanas for? I'm content now. Okay, to hell with jhanas. I'm just going to be content. I'm just going to sit here and have a nice time. When you sit here having a nice time, just being content, not wanting anything in the whole world, that's when jhanas come to you. That's how it works. You want something, it will never come. You let it go, and it comes to you. So be careful. Use insight. And that's why you get these great monks like Ajahn Chah, okay, these incredibly accurate teachings. Sit under the mango tree and hold your hand out. That's all. Do anything more than that, the mango will never fall. You can sit for years under that tree, it will not fall. Sit, open up your heart. Sit still. And the mangoes happen. They just fall, one after the other. Juicy, delicious. Look, I hope you have enough faith in me. I know what I'm talking about. That is how it works. You shake that mango tree, even a tiny bit, or you ask the mango tree, please fall. No. You've got to be perfectly content, at peace, not wanting anything in the whole world. And that's the insights which will come up for you. Every time you want to get deeper, it's wanting to get deeper is a problem. So one of the great things is just learning how to be content, be happy where you are. And that's where we come to the insight into freedom. We, you know, have all these amazing words in our languages, and we just haven't got a clue what it means. Do you live in the free world? I remember we used to have this musical, West Side Story, when I was a kid. And one of the songs in there, it had the lyrics, "Everything's free in America. For a small fee in America." It all costs. But is that real freedom? If you want to understand what freedom is, and it's opposite being in a prison, there's that story, I won't go in detail because I'm sure you've heard it and read it many times before. It's about the monk who went to teach in a prison. And after teaching in a prison for a long time, they asked him to stay behind. They wanted to find out what it's like living as a monk. So he told all the story about living in a monk opposite our here in Bodhinyana Monastery. And I won't go in all the details, but compared to living in a top security prison in Australia, living in Bodhinyana Monastery is far more ascetic. Now, I sleep on the floor. We only get like breakfast and lunch, no dinner. We don't have any TVs, no sports, and have to get up early and stay up late. And the prisoners, when they heard what life was, the daily life as a monk, they were actually shocked. Because, you know, in prison it's much, much, much more comfortable than that. That's one of the reasons if I ever get sentenced for doing something I never did and go to jail, I'd have a wonderful time. You know, you get three meals a day, you get actually choice, you can choose your own food, whatever you want, and it's amazing the amount of food you get in the jail, whatever you want. You can have snacks in the morning, snacks in the afternoon, you have midnight snacks as well. You've got a TV in your own room, you can watch whatever you like, and what else do they have in jails over there? You can play sport if you want. Oh, and if ever you want to go on a retreat while you're in jail, all you need to do is punch a prison officer, and you get solitary for a month. and they come and put a tray of food. That's the other thing, you get actually a tray of food. If you go over the road there, you see we eat out of bowls, everything goes in one bowl. You get actually a nice tray, you know, the rice here, or the potatoes there, the curry there, the vegetables over here, instead of all slopped into one bowl. So I would never be afraid of going to prison if I get sort of sent to jail. I say, thank you, can I have an extra 6 months please, because I need the extra time for retreat. That actually happened to a monk in Thailand some years ago. He was accused of something he didn't do and was put in jail for 3 years. And, you know, he just wore white. And he said it was one of the best years of his, actually, that Somdet. So the best time of his monastic life. He didn't have anybody come to ask him all these questions about meditation or about nirvanas he didn't have to go to all these house dhanas and do chanting and goodness knows what and also all these ceremonies. And so he just, in the nice little cell, it was actually probably more comfortable than the room in his monastery where he lived, and he had free time all day. So he said 3 years, he could read his books, he could meditate, no stress, no responsibilities. He said one of the most wonderful times of his monastic life, 3 years in prison. That's actually true. But anyway, back, why am I saying this? Is because, well, what is the difference between being in a prison and being a monk in a monastery? Which one is free? Which one is in prison? Even though it's more ascetic, maybe in Indonesia, those are tough jails, but Australian jails, you go inside of them, it's all mod cons. So, if you go, why is it that many people want to escape from prison? And why is it? It's always true, we've got this terrible waiting list of people trying to get into Bodhinyana Monastery, really good people, monks, we don't know what we're going to do to try and get people to come in. Why do people want to join a monastery? Why are they trying to get out of jail when it's more comfortable? And the reason is, a prison is any place you don't want to be. It has nothing to do with how comfortable it is or how austere. If you're in a mansion, you don't want to be there, your mansion is a prison for you. And that actually happened to me once. I remember I was going on this this Buddhist conference. It's called the Buddhist Summit in Japan. And because I was leading the Australian delegation, they gave me this amazing, must be 5 or 6 star room in this top hotel in some town in Japan. Amazing. If you've ever been to those hotels in Japan, I really recommend the toilets. Because, you know, I have all these buttons on the side. And the very first time, you know, I'm a monk, okay, so I can play around because I don't have to be mature. I play around with all these buttons, you know. One button, it squirts the water this way, another that way. You can change the pressure of it and the heat. And, you know, I was actually on that toilet for about half an hour. Not because I needed to do my business, because I was playing around with buttons. It's pretty good fun. Anyway, while I was telling this story, yeah, because after, you know, because you couldn't turn on the TV, you couldn't do all these other things, you couldn't use the minibar, and you were stuck in this room. And I just didn't want to be there. I want to be out in a forest or some nice place where I could have a walk or something. But I was stuck in this hotel room, nowhere to go, nothing to do. And for a few minutes I thought, hang on, I'm in prison. I'm in prison in a 5-star hotel. And I realized you can be a prison anywhere. It doesn't matter how comfortable it is. As long as you don't want to be there, you're in prison. But if you're like that monk who was 3 years in jail, if you want to be in jail, it's not a prison anymore. You're free. The difference between being in prison and being free is whether you want to be here or whether you want to be somewhere else. When I understood that, I got great insights into how to meditate. Throughout today, ask yourself, do I want to be here or do I want to be somewhere else? If the answer is you want to be somewhere else, you've just made a prison for yourself. You're not free. If you're here and you want to be at lunch, here is now a prison for you. Even if you're in Nimittas, beautiful Nimittas, but you want to be in jhana, you've lost your freedom. And if you have an aching body, you're really bored and restless, If you're happy to be here, you don't want to be anywhere else in the whole world than this restless, stupid mind, then you have freedom. All the freedom you can ever want. That's what I mean by insight. And my goodness, that works. I use that often. I'm sitting here, nothing's happened. Oh, I don't want it to happen. I'm just happy sitting here, just nothing much to do. And as soon as I have that thought, or that sort of attitude, happy to be here, boom, 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 you go deep really quickly. That's how it works. You're using wisdom power to drive your meditation. All the wanting to be somewhere else, that's putting yourself in a prison. Wanting to be here, which is basically not wanting, that's called freedom. And look at your life. How many times do you make prisons in your life? You're at the airport and you want to be on the plane. You suffer. You want to be somewhere else. You can't just enjoy where you are. You're on the aircraft and you want it to land. Another prison. I notice this. All the people, they try and get on the aircraft first. They always know they can't wait to get on the aircraft. They must like aircraft, but that can't be the case because they can't wait to get out at the other end. There's something really wrong there. So, if you really like the aircraft, yeah, wait. But if you don't like the aircraft, the best is last on, first off. So wait till the end of the queue. So you're last on, first off. People are really weird and strange. But they always want to be somewhere else. That is why they get on there, try and get there first. And they try and get off last. So they try and get on first and try and get off first. They always want to be somewhere else in life. Which is why life is a prison. And I've said this with people in relationships. Your partner. Are you happy with them? Or do you want another one? Do you want to sort of take it to the partner shop and swap it for a new model? You can do that on eBay, you know. You can sell your husband, sell your wife, and get a new model, get an exchange. But if you want a different partner, you will find that your relationship is a prison. It doesn't matter how austere or how beautiful it is. It's whether you want to be there or whether you want something else. If you're happy with the one you've got, it's good enough. You'll have a wonderful relationship. It's not your partner, it's not you. It's your attitude makes a beautiful relationship. In the same way, you may be in a job you hate. You want to be somewhere else. Then your job is a prison for you. You go another job, you make the same prison. You don't want to be there, you want to be somewhere else. If you change your attitude, I just want to be here. Then you're free. Look at me, I have to do all these jobs. You know, teaching retreat. Well, I don't want to teach a retreat. I don't mind meditation. I don't mind work. I shouldn't be teaching you guys. You look after yourself. I'm off. No. Sometimes I have to do all this stuff. And sometimes crazy stuff. You know, people come and talk to me about their marriage, about their kids. What do you want to do that to me for? I don't know about. I never had a kid. How would I know, you know, what to say to a child? All right, I told you the other day, they don't do baby blessings. I never signed up to do baby blessings as a monk. You know, this kid they put in your life. All these things you have to do as a monk in today's world. And, you know, sometimes you catch yourself. I don't want to do this. What am I doing this for? I don't have to do this. And I know now, as soon as I think like that, suffering. So I said, I'm happy to be here doing it. Who cares? And as soon as I'm happy to hold the baby, there's no problem. I feel free. As long as I take it back quickly, that is. So it's like the attitude is what makes you free. It's the insight. And please, in your meditation, we're focusing on meditation here. Whatever is happening to you in your meditation, whatever it is, if you want to be somewhere else, you're suffering. If you want to get rid of something, it's suffering. If you're happy to be here, you are free. So those who get up early in the morning, you're tired. Please be happy to be tired. happy to be here, happy to be fast asleep, then you are free. But if you don't want to be sleepy, you're suffering. And it gets worse. If you're restless, thinking about all sorts of stupid things, are you happy to be restless? Or do you want something else? If you want something else, you're now in prison, you're creating more restlessness. So if I have these stupid thoughts, I say, welcome, stupid thoughts. Haven't seen you for a long time. What are you going to do now? When you welcome the stupid thoughts, they stop. But if you welcome them in order to stop them, it's not welcome. You've got to be very careful here. Because a lot of time people say, I tried this, it didn't work. What do you mean it didn't work? Well, my stupid thoughts didn't go. That's not welcoming them. That's a come in as long as you go out. So if you do it really properly with full insight, you're just happy to be here. Now imagine that. You could spend one whole day, every moment of today, just being happy to be here, wherever that happens to be. Why not? You'll probably have jhana by this evening. Guaranteed. But you can't do that, can you? You always want to be somewhere else. This is not good enough. There's always something else which is more interesting, more beautiful. Have all these goals, all these places you want to be, all these things you want to attain, means you're never here. So be happy to be here. If you're happy to be here, you have this incredible sense of freedom. And it doesn't matter what your body is doing, it doesn't matter what the noise is around you, it doesn't matter what's happening at all. If you can do that now, imagine what it's going to be like when you get old or when you die. All these aches and pains in the body, just happy to be here. That's powerful. That means you die with a smile on your face and you probably never get reborn again because you're happy to be here. You don't want to go anywhere else. And you can do that. Doesn't matter how much pain you have. Because I've done that myself. I don't know if I've had as much pain as other people, but I've certainly had severe pain in my life, like everybody does. You can't expect to be 61 years and get out of life scot-free without a few really big pains and aches and agonies. But my trick is, okay, here it is. I'm stuck with it. I'm going to be happy to be here. Happy to be here with that gut which never gives me a moment's rest. Happy to be with this pain which just will not go away. Try that. That's really radical. You find you get peaceful so quickly. You want to be somewhere else, even if it's just an itch on the head. You want to be somewhere else, and that drives you crazy. So this is the insight. What you're really getting insight into is the basic teachings of the Buddha, which I mentioned earlier. Second Noble Truth. Wanting leads to suffering. Not wanting leads to Nibbana. I'm happy to be here. You're getting close to Nibbana. You want Nibbana, and it's always far away. You don't want anything, and here it is. This is the insight. And try it out. Experiment. Play. Because when you experiment and play, you find, my goodness, this actually works. And this really gives you the great insight, which I hope you all get. The letting be button. Instead of fighting the world, just let it be. You can really relax and have a wonderful time. And it does not matter how healthy or sick you are, how old or young, how smart, how stupid. All that stuff doesn't matter. You don't have to be intelligent. You don't have to be dumb. You don't have to be a girl or a boy, Asian, Caucasian, Eskimo, who cares? As long as you can let things be. And you can do that any time of your life. Happy to be here. Then you're totally free. Even in a jail. Want to be somewhere else? You suffer. So these are the real insights which you learn them when you're meditating because they make you peaceful and calm and happy. And then you transfer them from the laboratory of the meditation retreat out there into your real world. You say it's a real world, this is as real as the other world. Actually, this is more real here than what you see over there, because you spend so much time watching movies and TV. Is that real? Putting makeup on, is that real? What else do you do over there? There's so much lack of reality. You know, you go into spend lots of time in the shopping malls, is that real? You never even see the sun or feel the rain. Look, you always wear clothes when it's raining. Umbrellas feel the rain instead of trying to protect yourself from life. Get real. Just like the monks, we're real. So what you do is you take some of these insights which you learn in meditation, just learning how to be, and you have such a wonderful life. If you want to understand and appreciate the dinner you go out to in the evening, meditate beforehand. You're going out with your partner for a nice meal at an expensive restaurant. Look, you want to appreciate that food. So meditate beforehand to get your senses really strong. And when you sit down at a restaurant with your boyfriend or girlfriend, you tell them, shut up, I paid a lot of money for this food, I've got to enjoy every taste. And you pick it up, remember, just one spoon at a time, and you put it in your mouth. And you taste every delicious morsel of it. And you don't talk to the guy sitting next to you, because that's taking away my mindfulness. Shut up, look, I'm eating. And once you finish the one mouthful of the food, only then do you pick up the next one. Mmm, this is delicious. That's how to have a nice night out. If though you're going out, you know, to speak to the boyfriend or the girlfriend, then don't take them to an expensive restaurant. You're wasting your money. Take them out to McDonald's or KFC, any junk food, because you don't realize what you're putting in your mouth anyway. You're too busy talking. So, you know, save some money. Don't waste it on the food which you're not really mindful of anyway. That's my advice to you. And when you're working, to get all this work done, we are so inefficient. And one of the reasons we're so inefficient, I don't want to do this work. I'll just get it out of the way. Why do I have to do this work? Amazing just how much of your brain is wasted complaining. So much so that you can't put your energy and effort into the task. Now, half of it, or maybe two-thirds of it, is always complaining, oh, just what do I have to do this for? I shouldn't really have to do this. Why did I do this? Please remember, at work you get paid, okay? Your salary is a bribe for making you do something you'd rather not do. That's what they pay you for. If you enjoyed it, tell your boss, I really enjoy this work, then they wouldn't need to pay you, would they? So work is going to be suffering. If it wasn't, you wouldn't need the incentive of being paid. How many of you would you go to work anyway if you weren't paid? Put your hand up. I'm going to tell your bosses. So they can save some money, half your salary. I would go to work if I wasn't paid. But you can see what I mean there. It's going to be some difficulty. So stop complaining. Just be happy to be here. Then you find the work gets done. And somebody criticizes you. They always do that in the office, don't they? They call you a fool, they call you an idiot, whatever it is. That's just office politics. Be happy that they're calling you a pig. Oh, thank you so much. There was this Arsenal story. There was, this is insight, okay. There was this philosopher in ancient Greece, 2,500 years ago. And he would teach all his students, not just philosophy, but just how to live a happy, peaceful life. But of course, being a teacher, every now and again he had to scold one of his students, tell them off. But every time he scolded one of the students and told them off, telling them you're stupid, you're pig-headed or whatever it was, he would fine them a couple of dollars for the privilege of being scolded. Because it takes a lot of effort for a teacher to scold a disciple, so you have to pay me more for that. So every time you get scolded, you have to pay me $2. I scold you, Leo, you have to pay me $2. And this was actually what happened. So once the students graduated, one of the students graduated, they got a job working in Athens somewhere. And as he was going to work, people would sort of scold him, say, "Stupid idiot, get out of the way with your chariot," or whatever it was. And every time he was scolded, he would laugh. And even at work, his boss would go, "You're late." You know, he made too many mistakes. Every time he was scolded, he would laugh. And people thought he was crazy. He said, "Why do you laugh?" Even when he got married and his wife scolded him, he would just laugh all the time. And that really pissed off his wife. You know, just, "I'm scolding you, why do you keep laughing?" And he said, "Look, this is my training. When I was a student, I had to pay for this. Now I get it for free." So he appreciated it, didn't have to pay anymore. Well, that's actually great insights. So I think that, and I've been mentioning this to anyone who's got kids, every time you tell them off or discipline them, you must charge them. Charge them, you know, a dollar or something from their piggy bank or whatever. So when they grow up, you know, when they get scolded by someone at work, they will just laugh. "You know, my mum would always fine me when I got scolded. I would get it for free, yeah, hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo." So you can use some of the insights you hear here, especially in meditation. It does actually translate into your life outside. So all those people say, "How do I do this when I get home?" It will happen quite naturally. You'll understand what freedom means. Many places in your life, you're in hospital, you're stuck in a traffic jam. Are you happy to be here in the traffic jam? Or do you really, really, really want to get to the destination? That's called suffering if you want to get to the destination. So be happy to be here, stuck in the traffic jam. Then you understand the secret of life. You also understand how to meditate. Tired, restless, in pain, whatever. Sit here, I'm happy to be here. And you get deep into meditation very quickly. It's the secret of freedom. That's the insight. Not just how to meditate and get deeper, using wisdom power, not willpower, but how to live a beautiful life, no matter what situations come your way. So that's the talk this morning on wisdom power, not willpower. Da da da. You ready? Sadhu. 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 Don't always do it the same way. Otherwise, you're just robots.